The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. On today's episode of Campus Voices, we're joined in the studio by five undergraduate students from a variety of majors who are part of the Office of Economic Innovation and Partnerships Spin-In Program.
Hi, I'm Amy Lalim. I'm a marketing major and I'm a senior here.
My name's Gabriel Suspanic and I'm a biomedical engineering major and an electrical and computer engineering minor and a senior at Delaware.
I'm Jack Sherry. I'm a junior and I'm a marketing major.
I thought you were a design guy.
I am, but my major is marketing.
Hi, I'm Matt Spicer, and I'm a sophomore computer science major.
And my name's Adam Engelson. I'm a junior electrical engineer with a computer science minor.
Now, Matt, what's the project that you guys all have been working on?
So we've been working on the mTrigger app, which is a mobile application paired with an EMG circuit whose purpose is to assist physical therapy patients to complete their physical therapy regimens. It's unique in the sense that there's no sort of mobile app out there right now that makes use of EMG biofeedback technology and therefore allows people to complete physical therapy exercises within the comfort of their own homes. So we're excited about the possibilities that it could have for both physical therapists and their patients.
A lot of our listeners have heard of the concept of a spin-out project where technology at the University of Delaware gets spun out into a company. Let's give a listen to David Weir, the director of the university's Office of Economic Innovation and Partnerships, as he talks about the difference between spin-out projects and spin-in projects like these students have worked on.
One of OEIP's mission statements is to extract value from the university's knowledge-based assets. And by knowledge-based assets, we mean faculty, students, intellectual property, etc. And so one of the routes that we've done that is to spin out innovations that faculty members have discovered while doing their research, help them to spin it out into the commercial world so that the possibility is that you develop a business that grows and generates economic value. For example, years ago, Professor Gao over in electrical and computer engineering invented some computer software. We licensed it to him, and we helped him spin a company out known as ET International, which eventually grew to a 40-plus personnel company, a vast majority of whom were students out of University of Delaware. So it not only created economic development, it got jobs for UD graduates. So that was typically spin out. One day we were talking about it and we thought, well, why don't we spin in technology? And as that idea began to grow, we realized that one of the other mission statements we have is to help expose undergraduates to the real world of innovation and entrepreneurship. They have a lot of academic input from the Horn program and from the Lerner program, but we felt there was a gap here in giving them exposure to the real world of the innovator and the entrepreneur. And so the idea of spinning in technology from a small startup who didn't have either the resources or the financial muscle to do it themselves, if they spun it in and we would put together a team of undergraduates, these smart young minds, team of undergraduates, with the right skills, the technical skills, the marketing skills, the business skills, the design skills, put them on the spun-in project and allow them, with some guidance from us, to organize themselves into a product development team. And we would allow them to do this on their own, in a way, self-organize into a product development team. We're giving them guidance. We put all the resources together. We've put process together. The owner of the outside company, the entrepreneur, is an important component. He has to give them guidance. We've got faculty mentors, etc. We started this 2-3 years ago with about 3 students. As of now, we've put 80-plus students have gone through this process. And the thing that has been so positive is not only have these students produced economically viable products and spun them back out to the company who have commercialized them, a couple of the students have had jobs. But when you talk to the students after the fact, the experience that they have had in doing this and the way they express it is quite unbelievable. They feel they've been exposed to an experience at a critical point in their career in which they would never have gotten had they gotten involved with OEIP and the Spin-In project.
Gabe, who came to us with this idea for a project?
Brian Pryor, the CEO of Lightyear, over kind of near DTP. Delaware Technology Park. He basically came to the UD with the idea for the project, and then the spin-in program took care of the rest by putting us undergrads on the project development team.
How far developed was the idea?
Basically, it was just a concept in Brian's head. He had a partnership with Russ Payne, who is a pretty renowned physical therapist in Texas, so it was kind of their brainchild, and they knew where to go to get it done.
Adam, in layman's terms, how the heck does this work? Matt gave us this techie kind of explanation.
So far, the technology that we're incorporating is really going to be as simple as possible for the user. But underneath the small device is going to be a bunch of components, basically measures with 2 electrodes on your arm or anywhere else on your body that you need to rehabilitate. It's going to process those signals, amplify it, do whatever signal processing that needs to happen on the phone side, circuit side, so the patient can get the best care possible.
So it's a fancy biofeedback mechanism.
I don't know. I think the interface is pretty cool. Coming from a non-scientific major and kind of walking into this project, it's pretty great how easy it is to use. You know, we've been working on it. I've been watching the guys develop it. And it's really great to see something that is such advanced technology. And, you know, we can put it in a user's hand and make their life and doctors' lives a lot easier.
Guys, what's this technology? I mean, it's like it's what on a cell phone and what? I mean, you said put things on their arms, Adam.
Yeah, sticky little disposable electrodes, actually. You can buy 100-pack for, what, $20, Gabe? They're really cheap. They're physical therapists use them all the time. Nothing scary. It's all passive, so you're not going to get electrocuted or anything.
I'm in physical therapy right now, and I do not look forward to electric stim.
Yeah, eStim was actually considered one of our competitors.
Really?
Yeah, but the issue with eStim is that it doesn't provide the same rehabilitation as biofeedback EMG devices. See, with eStim, it trains just the muscle.
Right.
With our device, with the M-Trigger, it's going to train the whole neuromuscular pathway from your brain to the muscle. So you get a whole different type of rehabilitation that you need.
What's interesting about this group of students that are standing in front of me on the other side of the console here at WVUD are 3 of them are from techie majors and 2 of them are from the land of marketing.
I've always had a huge background in art, and so I got on board with this project in the design aspect, and I've had a lot of fun with it.
Did you come up with the M-Trigger name?
I came up with a similar name that we branched from. It was originally M-Track, but for multiple reasons, like similar competitor names and just a better fitting name, we switched it to M-Trigger.
Amy, you're also from marketing. How do you hope the M-Trigger name is going to help it sell?
Trigger is kind of this vibe of fast, sporty. That's who we're trying to capture. We're trying to capture a sports physical therapy market. These are people who want to get back on their feet as quickly as possible for our initial market targeting. And it also has to do with the fact that your muscle is triggering the application and the device, which is a really cool element that isn't so apparent when you first look at it, but once you learn about how it works, it's another layer of the name.
What are some of the technical things that you had to face?
We faced a lot of challenges in terms of designing the actual device. The signal that's coming from your muscle when you contract is super, super tiny. So there was a lot of amplification that had to happen. And when you amplify that signal, a lot of noise can get amplified as well. So we had to add a lot of filters. Me and Adam did a lot of work designing the actual circuit to, you know, cancel all the noise and make sure we're getting like a reliable signal that we can then feed to Matt in the app and have it, you know, as clean as possible, as reproducible as possible.
Adam?
Gabe and I worked a lot together on designing the circuit, you know, doing a lot of the processing of the signal. You know, both of us had different backgrounds as an electrical engineer and a biomedical engineer with an ECE minor. You know, we were both able to kind of collaborate and realize how we can make the best circuit possible. Personally, I think the hardest challenge to get through was interfacing with the phone itself. It's not necessarily as simple as, oh, you just attach two wires and there you go, it's done. There's a lot of steps and troubleshooting that took place that as a team we need to work together and identify how to get this done.
Now, without you guys revealing proprietary information, how did you reduce the amount of noise coming over the wire?
Several stages of amplification and filtration.
They're pretty common filters, but I think, yeah, what the point Adam was trying to make was the actual interfacing of the phone. That was the really novelty and secret part behind the whole device.
So, Matt, they're feeding you the signal, and then you're displaying the information in the app?
Exactly, yeah. A large part of my job was creating software that could interpret the signals that were being sent from the circuit and display them in a way that was understandable for the user, and that allowed the user to engage in treatments based around that signal.
What kind of feedback do they get?
So there are two different ways that the patient can really experience the biofeedback within the app. The first is with sort of a basic meter. So when the patient contracts whichever muscle they're supposed to be contracting, as that motion is happening in real time, they watch a meter go up and down following the motion of their muscle. And the meter will change colors to indicate that the patient has met the goal, the threshold of intensity of the contraction that their healthcare provider would like them to meet. They can also play a really cool game that's sort of based on Flappy Bird, just with the twitch of their muscle to sort of supplement that treatment.
Adam, you said something earlier that intrigued me. As every day when I go to PT, the end of it is they hook me up to electrical stimulation and make those muscles contract like I'm the frog we all dissected in ninth grade. This is analogous to that? I mean, to the electric stim? I mean, but you said it's people. No, Amy's shaking her head.
Yeah, I mean, they're similar technologies. Like, obviously, they're both used in the same sort of application in rehabilitating muscle. Sometimes when you have a muscle injury or tear or some sort, sometimes you need the e-stim to recover because you simply can't contract it. So that helps it develop. But as far as further from that, developing the pathway from the brain to the muscle, e-stim doesn't provide that kind of training.
No, it just contracts it.
Correct.
Yeah. So this is a matter of training the patient in addition to providing rehab to the actual muscle.
Okay. And the way the M-trigger kind of spins it in is that the patient gets to complete physical therapy in a fun way.
So Amy, you guys are the target audience for this?
Yeah, we are really the target audience for this. You know, yes, there is a really large aging U.S. population, and we hope to target them as well. But our initial market really is about capturing that person who wants convenience. And we're used to technology being integrated into our everyday lives. You know, we're used to being able to take an app and go do something really effective with it. And I think it is about making it accessible to the general consumer and making it a game, you know, that makes it fun, and making it mobile. That's, you know, we're all digital natives.
So growing up, I played soccer a lot, and after long days especially, you can wear the muscles down to the point where it's very easy to injure yourself. So whether I've had hamstring injuries, quadricep injuries, but I remember going to the physical therapist for a hamstring injury. And it was horrible going after a full day of school, then working, and then after that, finally going to put e-stim on my leg, sit there for 30 minutes as it's, you know, wiggling my muscles, thinking I'm going to get electrocuted, and then basically going home and thinking, like, oh, I hope it worked. With the M-trigger, I would be able to take this home with me instead of going to the physical therapist every day after this long day. I can do it on my own schedule. Also, it's a lot more engaging than sitting on, you know, a green bench and you sit there with something that's shaking your leg and you don't know what's going on. It's much more engaging. It's a lot more fun. I would have definitely used it growing up.
For those people that don't have an injury and would still like to use M-Trigger, I know I have a great time playing the game that Matt's been able to cook up. It's basically you just flex your muscle. You kind of feel like you're a Jedi and from Star Wars. I can just squeeze my wrist a little bit and make like the bird go up and down, basically, like, to use Flappy Bird as an analogy. So it's a lot of fun, even if you don't have an injury.
So for training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for training and working out.
Could you tell us a little bit about the team's interaction with Brian Pryor, the entrepreneur who brought us this concept?
Brian's a great guy. He's obviously busy in his roles as CEO of the company he already started. But he's really, when he comes to the meetings, he has a great vision for the product, and he kind of keeps us all on track with that each time, going off and talking about his plan for the future. It really, like, it makes me, what's the word, confident in where the project is going in the future. He actually wants to get this into physical therapist offices, and have it actually help people in the real world, which is a lot different from, like, the class projects that I take part in that stay in the classroom.
Amy, how far along the marketing cycle is this project?
It's essentially in a research and partnership development phase at the moment. So I've been doing a lot of background research on the market, and that is to say physical therapy and more specifically musculoskeletal injury, which is what we're targeting with this kind of device. And in addition to that, we're doing research on mobile health trends and to see how fast this kind of thing is going to be adopted. And those are all looking in the right direction, which is why it's a great time for us to be launching something like this. From my understanding, Brian's really going to be able to take it and run with it once we've done our part and handed it off. He does have existing partnerships, as Gabe mentioned before, with some pretty substantial clinics and clinic franchises across the country. And we're hoping to really utilize those to get some key thought leaders on it and generate product awareness.
By the time you all hand it off to him, it'll be ready to go, or will he still have development to do?
I mean, as of now, I think we have a working product that could be sold. I do think that we could take it farther places, though. You know, there's a lot of technical features that we could improve. Hopefully this spring, actually. Hoping to keep developing.
Matt, have you managed to think of both us Android users and you iPhone users?
We have, and speaking of kind of splitting it off into different apps, one sort of future roadmap idea that we have would be to not only take the existing application that we have now and develop a version for Android as well, but also to kind of create a version of the app that's more geared towards people who just want to work out. So that one would be more points and score based, and there would be options to share your progress on social media with your friends. And then we'd also like to make one that's more specialized for clinicians, that is more data-driven and more rigorously clinical.
So right now it's an iPhone app, but you're going to be developing it for the Android, or Brian could develop it for the Android.
Absolutely, yes.
Yep. I'm sure the preference would be Brian can develop it for the Android if he hires you guys.
I actually kind of want to add to that. So for the hardware side, we actually made it with to hook up through the auxiliary cord, which is the headphone jack. So the hardware is cross-platform. It can be hooked up into a computer, a smartphone, a tablet, whatever, and it's just basically the software that needs to be modified for the correct application.
And the computer scientists will say, oh, that's trivial. That's just software.
I disagree, but I do think it's I think it's really cool, though, that we decided to go the route of developing hardware that was cross-platform by taking advantage of the headphone jack. Because, like Gabe said, every mobile device has one. And so I think that really positions us to have a lot of growth in the future.
I've not picked on Jack very much. I understand that you were instrumental in the design work, making the M in M-Trigger look like 100, like 100%, and other kinds of things. Tell us about how you developed the logo.
Okay, sure. The M actually was one of my very first ideas. It took me a little bit, but it came to me real fast and, like, real suddenly. And the design from, like, sketch to final drawing, it didn't change all that much. It was more sleek and kind of, like, sexier and fast. And it was just, overall, it had a nicer, cleaner look. And I actually met with Brian and the, I guess, graphic designer for his actual company. And we sat down and talked it over, and they both suggested things. And I turned it around, like, that night, and it was beautiful.
Dave Weir was telling me that you also stepped in on another one of these projects that said, I think they said it was an app that was designed to help farmers detect blight in pine needles.
Correct. We had a meeting. We sat down with Brian. It was actually the first meeting. Amy was with us. And in the, like, when everyone was filing in, Sarah leaned over to me and was like, hey, do you want to do a second project? And I was like, sure. And it actually is a lot harder doing two than I thought it would be. And we've struggled a lot. We've had to change the name several times. But this weekend, we finally settled on something that really just was simple, and it was catchy, and it worked.
You went from Arbor Armor
to Pocket Farmer. Which I'm now realizing rhymes.
I think one of the things that's cool about this was with the design, you and the people in this other team were also looking at in terms of how this could develop, because Arbor Armor was like a standalone app.
Arbor Armor was too specific, I think. The way it was, it was mostly the logo that was limiting. It was a shield with a tree, the silhouette of a tree, and then an A inside the tree. That kind of really limited us to what we were initially working with, which was conifers or pine trees. But we wanted to expand it so we could potentially in the future include, like, shrubs, any kind of foliage really into the app. So we went with Pocket Farmer because it doesn't limit it to trees or any specific type of tree. It's just plants. It's got, like, you basically have a farmer, like, all the knowledge of a farmer in your pocket.
Even with the project that you guys are working on with M-Trigger, it's the same kind of idea. And seeing how the marketing and the design relate to the actual product.
I think that was one of the most important parts of my personal learning experience, because I had developed apps before in class, but never had I had the chance to sit down and have meetings with someone who does marketing or graphic design. And so learning how to express things about the project from a technical side, and then also to understand them from a marketing side, has definitely been an invaluable experience for me.
And you sort of see how they reinforce each other.
Exactly. We're all one team, and we all have one goal, and learning to work together towards that goal with our different disciplinary expertise is just an amazing thing to get to do.
Amy, did you have any trouble interfacing with these three techie guys standing against the wall over there?
No, they're great. It's, like, as I said before, it's really interesting coming into it from, like, a non-technically science background. I do have a cognitive science minor, so it interests me enough that I can sit there and say, like, wow, that's really cool. Like, I get geekily excited about it, but I couldn't do it. But as Matt was saying, integrating those two things and, like, learning how to do that is really important. You know, I can sit here and do market research and tell you that there's a $20 billion market opportunity, but if you don't have a product that works well, like that these guys have built, you have nothing, you have nowhere to go anyway. It's been a really interesting experience for me to kind of see the other side of all this stuff as opposed to what I usually get to do.
But Gabe, you guys are finding that people from marketing like Jack and Amy can provide value to the technical team.
Oh yeah, definitely. So, when we are making this circuit, it kind of looks very, like, very hardware-y and unsightly, and people don't really feel like they can approach something like that. But the stuff that Amy and Jack have done, especially Jack with the logo and the design for the app, it just looks awesome, I think. So that's really awesome that I would have never been able to do. I can make it work, but not make it look cool.
Sounds like you all are trying to sell us on the concept that the team is greater than the sum of the five parts.
I actually did a lot of solo work for the university. I started a couple years ago. I did some poster series for Center for Economic Education and Entrepreneurship, and those were fun. I had complete control over everything I did, but it really doesn't compare to working with people, because seeing all aspects, like Amy said, it's just a lot more fun, and you get to see how everything works, and working with people who provide input is really, really great, because I get stuck a lot on my own, and having people to back me up is really beneficial.
So I think one of the things that our directors had kind of asked us to ponder kind of coming into our showcase on Thursday is the impact that this has had on us academically, that, you know, this experience as a fully functional product development team before you graduate, how that's going to impact us post-grad. And, you know, you can only do so many team projects in school, and everybody hates those anyway. So it's working a team like this where, like, everybody is committed and everybody kind of brings their own, you know, special mix to the table, and everybody's really valuable. You know, there's only five of us. You got to pull your weight. I think it's a lot better of an experience than sitting in a, you know, in a group in an academic setting, a fully academic setting, and being like, well, I want to get an A, so I'm going to work a little bit harder than this person next to me. You know, this isn't about getting an A. It's about doing work that's going to impact the real world, and I think that's really motivating.
Yeah, and to touch upon the fact that we don't have a formal team leader, I remember Brian talked to us early on about how it would all be beneficial for us in our careers moving forward to all kind of get into the role together as a project manager. They've been kind of stressing that as we come up to the presentation. Like Amy said, they're telling us that we need to know basically the whole presentation from every aspect, regardless of what our background or what our role in the project was. And so I feel like there isn't someone on the team that hasn't stepped up to that, which is really great. And you see a lot of growth that way.
And not only is having to understand how everything else works a great individual learning experience, but I think it really strengthens our team, like Gabe was saying, because I know that on Thursday when we get asked a question about marketing or about how the circuits work, we're all going to at least have some idea of what that is, which I think kind of unifies our collective vision for the product and is going to help to make us successful.
And we're talking to Adam and Matt and Jack and Amy and Gabe the same week that they're going to be making a formal presentation over at the University of Delaware's Office of Economic Innovation and Partnerships about their experience. And that's when they keep talking about Thursday. That's another very important part, is not just being behind the scenes, but being able to get up there in front of the audience and present your work.
I think one of the hardest things to do for a technical person is talk in front of a large group, let alone try to sell something. That takes a whole nother category of skill that you just don't learn in class. In order to simplify your techie brain while you're presenting, it takes a lot of effort and honestly help from a lot of teammates. I remember the first time we rehearsed the presentation, I had no idea what to talk about in my section. I was going over competitors and technical details, and I went on and on and on, and these guys really helped me reform everything and keep it simple and kind of sell it to the audience, not just read details like a spec document.
If you had one thing that you would say was most valuable to you in this project, what would it be?
The general opportunity. So not everybody, even if they want to, has the opportunity to like kind of get roped into a project like this and be on a team like this and basically get to do what real people do in the real world, but stay in school, which is great.
You guys are real people, and I think this is a real project that shows real promise. And thank you all so much for coming down to Campus Voices.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.